Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. Where we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave. This is your host, Clint Locklear, for Trapping Across America. We have a very interesting show for you tonight. We're going to, our main thing tonight is going to be having Randy Smith from Contanning, PA on here, and he's going to be talking about how he catches so many raccoons in the snow and ice when most people think raccoon season is over with. And he's making some amazing numbers and catches right now. That's it's just downright amazing. And if you're the weather this year, I think guys it's been really weird. It's been warm. A lot of places aren't getting the snow they're used to seeing. A lot of rain, in more of the eastern part of the country in the southeast, we're getting just hammered with rain. And water trapping is turned into a nightmare because it's just constant flooding, and the ground is so saturated with water and so sloppy, it's making things difficult for a lot of different guys. A lot of guys are talking to me about that, and it is miserable, but that's just what trapping is. Eventually, I think somewhere down the road, winter will realize that it's winter time, and it'll come on because it's almost Christmas, and I guess this will be the last show right before Christmas. So from the guys of Predator Control Group, I want to say Merry Christmas to you all. And I hope you have a good season, get to spend a little time with your family. But sooner or later, this winter has got to kick in. A lot of the stuff I'm hearing about fur prices and stuff are seem to be running the gamut. I think personally that the fur buyers are very nervous about what stuff's going to be. The fur market, if you haven't been following that, it's got a lot more volatile as far as prices in the last couple of years. So at the beginning of most seasons, before any of the major sales happen, most of the fur buyers that I talk to are kind of in a wait and see, and they're not offering very high prices on a lot of different things because they really don't know. And one of the biggest things they don't know is, by the time they buy it, process it, find a buyer, and get out, because of volatility, they don't know what the prices are going to be. And it could put them in a big financial bind. And my suggestion to anybody out there this year, especially if you're catching fur and you find somebody that's going to give you a decent bid, it's time to get rid of it as soon as you get a decent collection built up for that. So if you're going to be catching, say 500 rats over the season or whatever, and you get 250 put up and you get a bid of $7, $8, $9 on them, I would go ahead and turn them loose, just because this the way the international market is right now about how volatile stuff is, I would turn it loose. This is not exactly the time, in my opinion, to get greedy and try to hold out on. If you get a good bid, you need to turn it loose, and I wouldn't hold it to the very end, because no one knows what's going to happen. You may get stuck. Now, there's always that chance you may get a little bit more. There's also that chance you're going to get a whole lot less. So if you've got it, sell it. And if you're holding off before you really start trapping and see what the prices are, I guarantee you, you can't sell what you haven't caught. So if you're not out trapping, shame on you. I've been running a little bit of experiment around home that I set out yesterday that so far has netted me one whopping squirrel and a large field rat. But I have to admit, I get fired up. I've got a few cages out along some creeks and rivers that I've set up for mink, and I'm playing around with that. It's kind of the kid come out into me, and hopefully something will turn out with that. And if it does, I'll let you know what I'm doing and if it seems like it's even a worthy thing. But I can tell you one thing about setting the cage traps on the creeks. When you cover them up, completely cover them, you just have that hole in front, it's going to be hard for someone to look off the side of a bridge and see your traps. That's one good thing about them. Well, we're going to go into the beginner's corner with Beaver Trapper from Alabama. He's got another good little thing he's going to be doing tonight for beginning trappers and advanced trappers for that. It's good information what he's saying. and then we're going to get into the interview with Randy Smith.
Welcome to Beginner's Corner on Trapping Across America. I'm Beaver Trapper in Birmingham, and this segment of the show is dedicated to those fellas just starting out, or better yet, those fellas wanting to get started but don't know where to start. Hello and welcome to another edition of Beginner's Corner. In a previous episode, I had talked a little bit about, if you're just getting started out, to make sure that you come up with a plan, with a system of trapping. Figure out what you're going to trap and how you're going to trap it. And make sure that your system, whatever system you come up with, is simple. And so in this segment, what I'm going to talk about a little more is, what actually am I talking about when I say a system? What does that mean? What does it consist of? And I think the best way to cover that is to give you an example. When I first started trapping, I was living in South Carolina, and I was the manager of a hunting plantation. We hunted 365 days a year, and I was the general manager. And part of my duties was working with a trapper, a local trapper, who would come in and take the predators out, take the coons out, and sort of help us out, take some of that pressure off of us. And that's basically how I got exposed to trapping and how I got introduced to it. And the fellow that we hired as a trapper to come in was an older guy. His name was Skeet. And when I first met Skeet, I didn't quite know what to think about him. He was an older guy, and he was what we would probably call all gimped up. He had some physical issues that made it difficult for him to get around. You could tell he wasn't a wealthy man. He drove an old beat-up truck, and when you looked at his gear, it didn't really look like it was the highest quality stuff, and you could just tell he was a unique individual. And as I got to know him, I figured out that Skeet had developed a system of trapping that worked for him. And it fit his location, it fit what he was trying to do, and it fit his physical limitations. Let's talk about his system for trapping coons. What he did was almost laughable by today's standards, or if you judged his system by what you saw on videos or what you read on the internet, it would be ridiculously simple. What he did basically was he would ride around and he would pre-bait areas with corn. He would put corn out, and what he was looking for were little shallow creeks, shallow sloughs, even little pools of water. Anywhere that had just a couple inches of water, anything that could hide a trap, that's what he was looking for. And he would pre-bait it with corn for a couple of days until he got the coon coming in and working the corn. And his entire system for trapping coon consisted of, number one, long springs with a grapple. That's it. There were no staking systems, no drowning systems, no cables, no wires, no hammers, no stakes, nothing. He would simply pull up in his truck to one of his areas where he was able to get out of the truck and walk over to the pool of water or walk over to the creek. And he would grab a handful of his number one long springs that had a chain on them and had a grapple on the end of the chain, and he would simply drop them in the water. He'd set them on his knee, drop them in the water, he'd walk back to his truck, get in it, and go to the next spot. And that was it. And then the next morning he'd come back and check his sets, and he just dropped them randomly amongst the corn. And his idea, his system, was that the coon are going to be walking around in the water, milling around, eating the corn, and they're simply going to randomly hit his sets. And he would put, in a small pool, he'd put 4, 5, 6 sets, because there was nothing to him. You just set the trap, dropped him in the water, and walked off. And it worked. he caught coons. He caught a lot of coons because he put out a lot of sets and he had done his work pre-baiting. While I'm not recommending this to anybody, and that's not how I trap coons, the point that I'm trying to make is that he had certain limitations that he had to deal with. He couldn't walk very far. He couldn't carry a lot of heavy weight. And so he had to come up with a system that worked for him. And that's what he did. And it worked great. He caught a lot of coons. Now, yeah, he lost coons. He had pullouts because his traps were old. His traps were weak. But that was a price that he was willing to pay. And he was able to cover a lot of ground. He would put out a lot of traps. And it was a sheer numbers game to him. And he caught a lot of coons and was very successful. And as I got started into trapping, he was the guy that got me interested in it. As the years went by, I sort of would chuckle when I thought back about old Skeet and his little number one long spring traps and all of that. As I got better traps and put in more sophisticated sets and, you know, went to pocket sets and went to body grips with cubbies and all of that. And I've sort of come a full circle to where now that my time is more limited, I'm really looking for simpler systems. And so I sort of look back on it and I see the wisdom of what he was doing and how he was doing it. And while I may, you know, disagree with his choice of traps or what have you, the simple fact of the matter is that his system worked and it worked well and it was very simple. So that's what I mean when I say if you're just starting out, figure out what kind of system you're going to use, what kind of traps you're going to use, how you're going to set them, what animal you're going to target, and then make sure that it's quick and that it's simple, that you can get in and get out, because as a part-time trapper or hobby trapper, our time is limited. There's only so many hours in a weekend. We all have other responsibilities that we have to do, whether it's school or family or work, and so we have to keep it fun, we have to keep it fast, we have to keep it quick. And so that's the things that you need to keep in mind when you develop a system that'll work for you based on what you're targeting, where you're at, and what you have in the way of resources. So anyway, I hope this has been of interest, and I hope it helps somebody or piques a thought somewhere. Until next time, thanks, and have a good weekend.
Are you on the line, Randy?
No. No, I'm home finally here. I've been sitting all day today.
You've been sitting, we're going to talk a little bit about something that, first off, I want to make a statement. I've heard this several times. People say, yeah, Randy catches coons in the snow and ice, but they just don't do that where I live. What say you about that?
Well, the coons that just about the whole way across the country, I think, breed in from mid-January up until probably April, depending on when your season's open to and when they're really active in your state. Regardless of what the weather is, if you get a little bit of a break on it, or if you even have deep snow, if it gets a little bit of a crust on it, coons are going to walk.
So when you're...
And if they're moving, they can be caught.
If they're moving. So it's not just because you live in the western part of PA with the old coal mines and stuff like that. You feel you could do this or have done this in other places?
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, I talked to guys that bought the video from all over the country, and come that sweet time of the year they're out and moving, and there's a lot of guys that are doing the same thing that I started pushing with the video there.
Okay. Well, I guess we ought to back up a second. This is Randy Smith. If you don't know who he is, I've been fox trapping with him. He goes out to Indiana and kills a bunch of coyotes, but kind of his latest claim to fame, if you want to call it that, in the last few years is he catches hundreds and hundreds of raccoons in the snow and ice in Pennsylvania in some of the worst weather I've ever been around, and he does it consistently. Why don't you talk a little bit about the numbers before you start going into techniques so someone can actually believe they can do this?
Well, last year I caught about 800 coon, and I would say 600 of them, or maybe a few less than 600, were caught from the 1st of February. And I think it was in 2 weeks I caught the bulk of the coon that I caught, probably about 500 in our last 2 weeks of the season. And that's last 2 weeks of February.
And in your, what are your temperatures at that time?
They fluctuate, but nothing triggers them to move like long, drawn-out cold spells, and then you get days where the sun comes out and it gets maybe 40 or so, and it's that time of the year where every coon in the every boar coon, every adult coon is going to be out. And they put the miles on looking for females that are ready. And if you set up on the right spots that are like, when I'm looking for coon places that time of the year, I try to intersect them on dispersal type of locations, just like you'd be setting up for, say, fall dispersal, coyote or fox. But you're looking at, long denning areas connecting through usually, culvert pipes or under the road or, under bridge decks or stuff like that, funnel type areas.
So since we did the videos Born Gone Wild, I kind of know what you're saying by that, but you're actually changing, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, but from what I can tell, when you're saying denning area to denning area, you're talking about like a ridge line and then a field in the bottom and another ridge line, and you figure out how they're going to get from point A to point B.
You're right. Ridge line, hollows. We live in pretty mountainous terrain around here, so the water has to flow some way, and I just, of course, in order to get hundreds of traps out, you got a road trap for raccoons, so you try to intersect them going under or over the road, mostly under.
Mostly under. And when you're not talking about the classic Tom Miranda digging a pocket under a bridge.
No. We have very tough conditions here in Western Pennsylvania to actually build a set when it comes to trapping coons. It's mostly rocky, very little soil that you can actually dig a pocket into, and very little ground cover to hide a conibear bear. So until the dog proofs, really got popular, it's a tough way to try to trap. So all my trapping is with little grizz of a Duke dog proof traps now.
So you're pretty much catching 600 coon in the winter in the snow and ice with nothing but dog proof traps.
Yeah, that's just primarily all I use anymore.
Well, what would you say your system would be if someone was going to ride along with you? Let's start with the location, because that's always the key thing. Try to be a little more specific on your locations. When you're driving down the road, what really gets you hopped up when you see it?
Real long, either ridges or hollows that you can see have mature timber in them. The rougher the type of the terrain, the better. Really great viney woods, rock cliffs, boulders, good denning area. And just connecting those, two type of places where you have the same on each side of the road, and you're going to intersect them going from one side to the other. Denning areas are the key thing.
Denning areas. So you're not locking in on buildings or barns, like what I've always read about wintertime raccoon trapping.
I have and still do. If it's rut season, and say the snow is real deep, and they're probably coming out and just taking a peek around, but they're not, actually walking, I will go to them. But to take big numbers, you have to wait until they're moving and let them come to you.
So if I understand you, Randy, you may get a bunch of traps out, then you may have to run them and wait on a weather change to get your big catch.
Exactly, right. That's right. It may be a lot of getting, you know, things really prepared for, you know, the right weather that's coming. And, you know, I'm always watching the weather, you know, most trappers do. And when those coons have been locked in for a while and you get a break in the weather, I go to setting traps like a wild man to be ahead of them. So those numbers of coons, you know, may not be a lot of days of 15 or 20 coon. It may be, you know, some days of nearly 100 coons, you know, just being in front of them at just the right time.
That's amazing to me because, you know, you just don't hear about guys in Pennsylvania getting close to 100 coon in a check.
No, I think I've broken all the records here in PA. I mean, I've never said that publicly, but, you know, it's pretty much known now that, you know, that I've broken the ice, so to speak, here in Pennsylvania, that, you know, record catches can be made.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure pretty much anywhere that you're... Even in Tennessee, I can tell a big difference in February. The coon get bigger that we catch, and they are attracted to bait and stuff a whole lot more at that time, and gland lures, and so it's pretty much the same. It's just most people quit coon trapping as soon as it gets cold.
Right. Yeah, fortunately, during that time, I have a lot of it to myself. I mean, I've got a lot of competition now here that this style of trapping has caught on in my area, but still, whenever people have the knowledge, they still have a hard time putting the work towards it.
The fire in the belly.
Exactly. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of hiking up and down steep banks here to get it done.
Now, one of the locations that I found fascinating, I've actually found some of these at home, but we just don't get the winters, and the coon don't seem to den up the same. But, you know, where you're in the mountains where you find the old, they're almost like caves, but where they used to dig the coal out, just the individual, not the big mass mining operations.
Mm-hmm.
Describe kind of what that is and what you see, what you're looking for.
Well, certain hillsides around here, there was a coal seam, and there would be local mines where people went in and dug coal to heat for the winter. It was just a community type of thing that they did, and they would go back in a long ways. And most of them have caved in, but there's still, you know, enough room for coons to get into them. And come the cold winter months, those can really be hot spots here in this part of the state.
So the do you think the females are denning up in there along with the younger coon, and the males are just making the rounds trying to get lucky?
Yes, I do. That's in rut season there, unless it gets really jumps up and gets warm, I catch very few juvenile or female coons.
Well, I can tell everybody, Randy showed me some of these places. I don't know, is probably around the PA show or something. It was summertime. And you want to do what he's doing, you got to be willing to actually do a lot of hiking in between once you get off the road. I mean, it was literally straight up and down like a mountain goat. So
right.
When you're going out to do that, it's almost like a force march all day, I would say.
Yes, but when you find those type of places, you can gang set on those trails coming out of them, and actually take coons from miles around you because they all know where they are.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I were to walk up on, find one of your locations and walk up to one of these denning areas, what am I going to see you've done with the trap? You know, how are you staking it? Any type of tips that you're willing to give on the dog proofs themselves?
Yeah, I've changed a little bit, not drastically, but a little since the video there. But I'm using about a 3 foot piece of 3/32 cable with a cinch loop on the end that I just cinch it around a heavy root or, you know, a tree big enough that they're not going to chew off. And I put the trap up generally kind of high on the bank so that it's not going to be bothered by any rain or if you'd have melt off or whatever. You never want to set a dog-proof trap near the water because when a coon plays with it and he drops it and it falls in the water, he's done. He's not going to fool with it no more. So I keep it away from the water for that reason. And when I catch a coon, I don't want them in the water in, you know, like teen temperatures, because it's a miserable existence till I get around there to get him picked up. So I keep him dry off the water. And also, in the snow, if you picture a catch circle, it's kind of the same idea as putting a coyote set in the bank. When there's a catch circle up against that snow on the bank there, it's real visible to the other coons coming down through that crossing. And with that, and a lot of odor thrown around there with the trailing scent, you miss very few coon to come through there.
Because they're, if I'm not mistaken, they're attracted to the body odor of other coon at that time of year.
Absolutely. It's just like trapping red fox. Once the pump is primed with catching one, it just continues to get better.
And what is your, do you have little quirks about when you're setting, or I can't imagine how you're pushing the stabilizer of any trap into the ground when it's frozen. So are you zip tying or wiring, or what are you doing?
Well, you have to be real careful, especially with the little grizz, about jamming them into the you know, the soft melted, you know, mud type of catch circle or whatever through the late winter, because it will freeze in and you can have ring offs if the trap can't be pulled up out. Now, with just a single post on the Duke, it's not nearly as problematic. They can get it pulled out of the ground. But if the ground's frozen solid, you can either wire tie to a sapling with a, you know, like a plastic wire tie, or just bring two stones up and push them together and just have the trap sitting between the two stones. And when the coon gets caught, he'll just knock them out of the way.
Okay, I'm kind of confused on that. Describe that a little bit better.
If you take two flat rocks and lay them on the ground and them up against one another,
okay,
you can just put the trap stabilizer in between those two, and that'll keep your trap upright.
Well, I guess that was the difference between Tennessee and Pennsylvania. We call them rocks.
Okay. And also, I guess, you know, most people know that I put a styrofoam coffee cup on top of the trap, wedge it down over the trap, and that those two things keeps the weather off your bait. And it really stands out, not so much in the snow, but in a catch circle or in bare ground. You know, if you have a trap sitting there with that white cup against the leaves or a dirt background, and and a lot of trailing scent around there, they're going to go right to it.
Now, do you want to go into your baiting procedure and your trail scents, or?
Oh, sure. I mean, the baiting procedure that I use is either a marshmallow, or I've been using lately, and I think it's working a lot better. Have you seen those? They're called orange slices, a large gumdrop type of deal.
Yeah.
Have you seen those?
Yeah, like the candy.
Right. One of those under the trigger, can't hardly get it pulled out of there without snapping a trap. And then I just take regular dog feed and either put brown sugar with it or powdered sugar, and I just pretty much fill the trap up then and put the cup on the top, and that's the bait. That's all I do. The trailing scent is used cooking oil, like you can get at any, you know, restaurant or bar or whatever. And I mostly use your Federales mixed with that cooking oil.
Mm-hmm.
Are you just about, I would say, a quart to 5 gallon. And it has that really good smoky odor that they really like.
Are you trying to get places that do fish, or does it matter to you what type of cooking oil it is?
When you add, you know, your bait to it, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
And, you know, like on a heavy setting day, last Saturday, I went through 2.5 gallon. So I'm not afraid to use it.
No.
The more odor out, the better.
Now, how many traps would you say that you're running once you get everything out and going and you know the weather's about to change? How many traps are you physically running, Randy?
Well, I've had some help here the last couple of days, but right now I have out over 400 traps waiting on this weather to change tomorrow and the next day.
See, I think that's, you know, that brings up a good point to a lot of guys. They, you know, they hear your numbers and they go out and they try to reproduce it, but they try to reproduce it with, you know, 50 or 60 traps, and it's just not possible.
Yeah, that's not being done around the house.
How many miles do you think you'll run when you're checking?
Well, I know I went through a tank and a quarter yesterday, and that's, you know, I can run about 300 mile on my truck for a tank full. We started at 4 o'clock in the morning and pulled in here at dark, and that's at a little after 7.
Mm.
Sounds fun, doesn't it?
It that's what commercial trapping is. It's work.
Yeah. So, but I'm looking, you know, I'm looking for the next few days to have, you know, close to 100 coon a day, I think.
That is phenomenal. How are you handling putting up the fur?
Well, we're getting them skinned and then just freezing them green right now.
Until
that's getting them skinned too.
That's a lot of skinning.
Yeah, Bill Hartman and I are trapping together right now, and we can skin fast.
Well, from being with you, is there anything you do slow?
Can't think of nothing right now.
I mean, the first time I saw you skin a cow, I was just dumbfounded. But if you, I know you do most of your trapping in the winter, but if you were going to give advice to somebody that's going to trap early season, can you think of anything that you can give advice for? Because that's when most guys are going to trap.
Yeah. Well, you know, coon trapping is, you know, there's little things about location. The location is what changes the, you know, how you coon trap, really. I mean, it's basically the same thing other than the location. In the fall, you might be, you know, intercepting them going to corn or from denning areas to corn, or that it's more of a food source thing in the fall. So rather than, you know, me intercepting them from going to denning area, you're intercepting them going from denning area to food area. And that's the only difference. And it's all about, you know, knowing which roads have the most opportunities for them to be, you know, free to cover a lot of crossings. Some roads you'll get on that in 5 mile, there's only two good places for them to cross. And some places you'll get where there's 10 or 15 in 5 mile. And, you know, the more places you have to intercept them, the more coon you're in front of, the higher your catch is going to be.
Right.
But the right roads are what is key. Road trapping is the only way to really produce coon in numbers.
I agree with that. If you were going to trap, I know normally you go somewhere and trap coyotes a little earlier, but if you were going to trap in the fall, would you still rely on the dog proofs more than anything else?
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah, there's no other way, you know, that when I can jump out of the truck and put, you know, a trap or two in and be back in the truck in under a minute, you can't do that building sets.
Correct. I agree with you on that. Have you, since you do some control work too, do you ever use the little grizzes or the dukes for your summertime work?
If I have a particular coon to catch that has been educated with a box trap, I will. I don't like to have an animal sitting in the open and having little kids around or what have you for liability reasons.
Right. Well, do you change your setting procedure at all in the warmer weather?
No.
Same thing.
Nope. Yep. That they will not leave that trap with that baiting procedure without working it completely.
What else can you think about your coon? If you could give tips or any, like, I'm gonna give one, and I hope this isn't any type of major secret, but this was mind blowing to me. A guy gave instruction to, Jim. He's also taking instruction from you. You know what I'm talking about, right? Construction guy.
Uh-huh.
He was saying something that, you know, you was telling him to get dry dirt under the bridges up there because you salt the roads and that dirt will never freeze.
Uh-huh.
See, I've never thought of that. I thought that was absolutely ingenious.
Yeah, you know, as they salt year after year, that salt, whenever it dehydrates the water and turns to powder, it blows under those bridge decks, and that dirt is just like powder under there that's already antifrozen for you, so to speak.
Have you ever used that on your coyote or canine sets, and did you see anything wrong with it?
Oh, no, it'll work fine. It'll really eat your, I mean, that calcium chloride's tough stuff.
Right.
You trap them.
Well, any other advice for we finish this up that you could think about the wintertime trapping, or any tips or anything like that?
there's some there's more to it, but I prefer to keep some of it to myself, you know.
I understand.
For several reasons.
Right. Well, I'm sure since people have started copying your system, I'm sure that's made you rethink about being open about everything.
Yeah, it sure has made for a lot of competition for me, but I can drive an hour from here and get away from it.
What are your numbers you're trying to, what's your goal this year you're trying to reach?
Well, so far this is the most mild winter that we've had in years. And if it would stay open, I think that near 2,000 would be doable. I missed the probably the best 3 weeks of the fall coyote trapping, and I would have been way ahead to be coon trapping instead, but when you really like the coyote trap, you got to get that out of your system every year.
That's right, brother. You catch 2,000 coon in Pennsylvania, I'll take you to any steak place you want to go.
I'll hold you to it.
Oh, well, you don't have to worry about that, but yeah. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your system with us. And if anybody didn't know, Randy's got two videos out. One of them is called Boars Gone Wild, where he's showing you how to catch the raccoons in the winter in the snow and ice like he's talking about. And he's got another one, Combines and Coyotes Wolfing the Corn Belt, where he goes out there and absolutely waylays the coyotes. And both systems are really neat. He's very, I should probably get you off the line before I keep talking. I don't want your head to get too big, Randy, but he's definitely, he comes up with systems and procedures that once he gets them close to being perfected, it's just rolling on at that point. And if you want to try to copy it and get some of the same numbers of videos, would definitely help you. But I do appreciate it, Randy. And
more thing that I'd like to kind of apologize to the guys that are on Wolfer Nation, and I've had different people tell me that they'd like to hear from me, but I'm not a computer person, and if I have the time, I'm doing something to kill something.
Right. Well, so, I'm gonna try to get up there. This winter, we've talked about that a little bit, and if so, I'm going to set your computer up so you can just hit favorites and then log in, then you can look around and respond if anybody has anything for you.
Okay, buddy. Thanks a lot, Clint. You've been a real friend to me.
Well, you have been to me. Well, I'm sure we'll have you on again talking about coyotes and live market and getting permission. I consider you the getting permission master, so we'll talk about that one of these days.
Okay, God bless you.
All right, bud.
Take care.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Feeling good.
Feeling good.
Like you should.
Like you should.
Airborne.
Airborne.
Feel the sweat.
Feel the sweat.
On your face.
On your face.
So good.
So good.
So good.
So good.
Here we go.
Here we go.
All right.
All right.
Airborne.
Airborne.
Fit to fight.
Fit to fight.
Well, I want to take a few minutes tonight, and I want to talk about being prepared for the colder weather. Just some things I've learned over the year that saved me a lot of heartache and a lot of sweat going through the season. To be honest, I think it's one of those things that comes with a whole lot more experience, because you realize Mother Nature is going to kick you in the teeth. So it's best if you go and prepare for it to begin with. Before I get into that, though, I want to thank everybody for telling friends and other trappers about Trapping Radio. I know you're doing this because this is episode, I believe, 8 or 9. I'm not looking at the computer right now. But it's only been out for about 2 months, and the website has already got over 10,000 views on it. So it seems to be resonating. And if there's any topics out there that anybody wants me to try to tackle or find someone who can, just let me know. at the bottom of any show, if you got any recommendations or want to add to the content that we're putting on there about the techniques or methods or whatever, put them in the quote, because your experience is as important as anybody else's when it comes to teaching other trappers how to be better trappers. But tonight, what I want to talk about more than anything is when you set a trap in, a lot of times when season gets open, we're all in a big hot lather to get out there and get those sets in the ground, which is understandable by every means. But it's normally, when season opens, normally it seems like it's a little drier. It's not freezing yet in most parts of the country. And you can use the natural dirt that you've got there, and you can fly through sets and get a good line out. Now, the problem with that I found over the years is if you realize that it is in the wintertime and you're either going to start getting cold weather, freezing ground, a lot of rain, different things like that. My advice to anybody, when you start a line, I do this, I don't do the antifreezing part, but I do it for rain, even in the summer if it's in the middle of a drought. When I go to put traps in, I hardly ever use, there's very few places I go that I can use the soil that's with me, because it's going to have too much clay, or it's going to have a lot of that black dirt in there that's like gumbo, different things like that. Luckily, sometimes I do get into places around the mountains and bottom grounds where it's good sandy loamy soil, and I'll have that at the site with me to put the trap in. But starting off from the beginning, just, you can use red clay to set in if it's never going to rain, it's not going to freeze, and the sun's never going to come out once it does get wet. Now, how realistic is that in real life? It's not very realistic. The gumbo mud is very similar to this, and I've got a little blog post I'm putting on this same topic this month. The black dirt that a lot of people call gumbo, I don't know really what it's called. That's just what trappers have always called it. You see it a lot in the Delta country. When you get out in the West, you'll see a lot of it. It's the stuff that's it's hard as a rock when it's dry. You can sift it when it's dry, but as soon as it gets wet, it just turns into a huge suction cup. It'll build up on your tires. It'll build up on your shoes. I've been in it in Mississippi so bad that it would literally ball up on the tires of the four-wheeler so bad that I had to get out with my trowel and shave the mud off the tires to make it another 150 yards. So I found some water to try to get it washed off. I mean, nasty, nasty stuff. If you set in it and you get rain, you're asking for trouble. Now, the clay and the black dirt at the same time, they hold moisture for a long time, which means if you're going to get cold weather coming, it's going to start putting you out of commission. So don't use it. My advice is to bring in some sandy soil or some sandy loamy soil, blend it in. You can always mix in your peat moss and your buckwheat hulls and stuff to give it that organic, nice look to it. And then you've got something good no matter what you're in, because even if you get on a 400-acre place, you could run into two or three different dirt types, some good, some bad. But if you're using the dirt that you're bringing with you, you've always got that right there with you. And I know that it's kind of aggravating to do, because you got to carry a couple of buckets of it with you. I've gotten a habit now, when I see places I can get dirt, I've always got a couple of 5-gallon buckets that I can fill up as I go along during the day. You know, you're looking for the classical old buildings, under bridges, logs that's fell down, and they're good sized logs. A lot of time the dirt under there will be dry. When I see stumps that are uprooted on their side, if you dig into that a little bit, because the rain will be able to flow down that so quick, a lot of times it's still bone dry in the middle, on the sides of edges where you've got sandy loamy soil, and the water will just run off where it's almost sheared off, like where a bulldozer's been, or the side when you get in mountainous terrain. A lot of times that'll be dry. So I get in a habit as I'm going, if I see one of these spots, I make sure both of my buckets are full, and then I go. If not, a lot of times what I resort to is basically building sand pools, like beet sand type stuff, and I mix a lot of peat moss and some grass clippings in there and some buckwheat hulls, and I can make it look organic, and I can feather it in at a set. It's going to fire off real easy. I don't have to worry about what the suction type soils are going to be doing. And that's pretty common knowledge there. But my advice to anybody, if you're starting out at the beginning of a season somewhere and you have nice weather, you're going to start a new place, everybody's goal is to get the most traps in the ground that they can, which is the right goal to have. But the second part of that goal needs to be that you've got the traps in the ground that are going to keep working for a long, long time. And the only way that I know to do that, if it's in the fall and it, you know, it's kind of cool, it could be getting colder, could be getting warmer, I go ahead and antifreeze those sets from the get-go. That way I know I don't have to mess with that anymore, because the more you mess with a set, especially for coyotes, a lot of times your older coyotes are going to shy away from it. They've been checking it out. They've been getting kind of close. They've been looking things over. And you go in there and start disturbing stuff on the older coyotes, that brand new eye peel is not exactly what you're looking for. So if you're going out and you're putting your sets in, and if you're using salt, go ahead and put it in there. From the get-go, put your peat moss down. If you're dealing with red clay, put some peat moss under your levers. Put your dry dirt in there and layer your salt just as normal. I may not at the very beginning put the top layer of salt on the thing, because deer, rabbits, stuff like that could be an issue. But really, guys, a lot of people say that about the salt, and every now and then that can be an issue in certain places. I know when I was up in Michigan one time, the rabbits were horrendous when I used it. Most places I go, that's not the case. Now, if I go in and I build with the dry soil and the peat moss, especially if I'm using that for a pan cover, that can handle a whole lot of rain if I've got a good soil on there. If you know the freezing's coming and your soil is wet and you have fresh soil with you where you don't have to dig, it's amazing how quick you can just dig down, grab a leather lever of your trap, pull that dirt out of the way, scrape it out with your hand, pour in dry dirt, mix your salt up with it or your glycol, whatever your process is going to be, and then set it back in. So when you know that cold weather's coming, it's not going to take a whole lot of effort to change it. But what hurts, guys, and there's been some posts on Wolfer Nation here recently about this. Guys have the nice weather, they put their traps in, everything's going hunky-dory, and then all of a sudden the temperatures drop down below freezing, they've left that wet, moist dirt in the soil, and all the traps are freezing up. Now all of a sudden they've got to go back through and they've got to rework their whole line. Not the best usage of time, because I bet if you didn't have to do that, you could either be putting in coon sets or water sets or setting up more property if you're just dry land trapping. If you're going back and constantly reworking those same sets over and over again, you're not going to get the production out that you need to get out. So when you set your stuff in, set it up knowing it's going to rain because it's going to, and it's going to freeze because it's going to. You know that from the beginning. Historically, winters, that's what happens. So if we get our sets in, we prepare them that way right off the bat, we don't have very much to do down the road. Now, if you're in a marginal place like I am in Tennessee, if you're in Alabama, Georgia, the ground's still going to freeze and screw you up sometime. If you're going to go to the glycol where you're mixing, you know, 25% glycol to water or fox urine or whatever your system is you decided to go with, in a very marginal area like we have right now, you can go around, if you know the temperature is going to be dropping, and soak that thing down with your glycol mixture, and that's not a big deal. But if your temperatures are going to be seriously dropping below that 15, 12 degree mark, the glycol is going to start failing on you, and that's when the salt is. So if you're in one of those areas that you know it can really get blue nuts cold on you, go ahead and use your salt, your calcium, or whatever it is that you're doing in the bottom of that, or make sure all your sets are being changed where they've got dry dirt at all times. But keep those sets where they're ready to go, where you don't have to piddle with them, is a huge time saver, and it'll mean a lot of different animals to a trapper over the course of the year. So plan ahead. Know winter's coming. Know it's going to rain. Know it's going to snow. Know it's going to get cold. And when you start out at the beginning, be ready for it, and you're not having those 3 or 4 days of downtime when it does come up and bite you in the butt. Well, that's it, guys. Like I said, I hope everybody has a great Christmas. I hope you have a good New Year's. Enjoy some time with your family. Enjoy some good food. Enjoy going out. If you got some relatives that are coming over and they're not really into trapping, take them out a little bit. I remember one of the memories I have at Christmas, on Christmas Day, when I got back from Alaska, the second year, my brothers came down for Christmas, Christopher and Andrew. My little brother, which is Andrew, wanted to go out with me, and I had a road line set up around the house right there. And I had mink sets out, and I had never caught a mink before. But on Christmas morning, with my little brother with me that knew nothing about trapping, when I pulled off this little bitty drainage on the side of the road, there was a female mink that was drowned in, if I remember right, it was a number 11 long spring. Now, not only was that a neat thing for me because it was my first mink, but it was a neat thing for him because he's never seen a mink. And it was just kind of cool that, for one, it was on Christmas, and two, it was with my little brother. So if you got some kids coming over or some people that are kind of hint around about what you do, not really sure, take them out with you. They'll enjoy it, I promise you. And you may be able to build your own Christmas memories from something like that. Well, all right, guys, go out there, have a great time. Keep racking that fur up, getting it put up. Just enjoying the outlife and just keep hammering it home, boys. And I'll talk to you next week on Trapping Across America.